Thank you all for joining me today. My name is Carlene Velez, and I am the Outreach and Recruitment Specialist with the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. Today, we are going to hear and talk about Fulbright opportunities for doctoral students, postdocs, and early career awards. So thank you again for joining us today. Just a bit of housekeeping, I do want to let you know that the question box is open, so feel free to put your questions in at any point, and I will work on answering them at the end of the presentation. The idea today is that I'll spend about 30 minutes going through the information and have the final 30 minutes for questions. So please feel free to add your questions to the question box, and I will get to them as soon as possible. I always like to start out my presentations talking a little bit about the history and mission of the Fulbright program. The Fulbright program has been around for almost 75 years. It is the U.S. government's flagship international and educational exchange program, which is very exciting. And we are sponsored by the U.S. government and administered by the Institute of International Education. We partner with nearly 160 countries worldwide to offer opportunities for faculty, administrators, professionals, artists, journalists, lawyers, people from all backgrounds to conduct research and study and teach abroad. The whole idea behind the Fulbright program is to foster mutual understanding between nations, advance knowledge across communities, and improve lives around the world. And that really should be at the heart of any Fulbright application. The Fulbright program promotes diversity and inclusion in all of its programs. So not only do we say this, but we also go out and actively recruit people who are from previously underrepresented audiences, people who are at minority-serving institutions, and so we encourage people regardless of race, color, national origin, sex, age, religion, geographic location, socioeconomic status, disability, sexual orientation, or gender identity to know that you have a place in the Fulbright program. We really strive to have the recipients of Fulbright Awards represent the diversity of the American population. A little bit about Fulbright by the numbers. The Fulbright program awards over 8,000 awards annually. This is really quite remarkable because about 10% of those, or 800, go to U.S. scholars and administrators. We have another 2,000 that go to students, U.S. students, about 4,000 to foreign students, about 900 to visiting scholars, and then we also have a foreign language teaching assistant program that has about 400 recipients. Approximately 390,000 Fulbrighters have participated in the program since its inception in 1946, and this is something that we're really proud of. If you become a Fulbrighter in any of the programs, once a Fulbrighter, you're always a Fulbrighter, and you have that connection and that network that's automatically built into your professional profile. A little bit about the distribution of awards, U.S. Scholar Awards. As you can see, we have awards representing a variety of different activities. So first, there are teaching research awards, teaching awards. We also have an administrator seminar, and then we have a postdoctoral research program, which is one of the programs that I'm talking about today. About 8% of the applicants received awards for postdoctoral research. There are many other early career applicants, so people maybe within the first five years of their career who received some of the teaching research or teaching awards in other categories. So there are many, many opportunities for early career and postdoctoral applicants. Now a little bit about the eligibility for U.S. Scholar, postdoc, and early career applicants. First and foremost, to apply for any Fulbright award, you do U.S. Scholar Award, you do need U.S. citizenship. You can have that citizenship by birth or by naturalization, but you do need to be a U.S. citizen at the time of your application. The second requirement is that your PhD must be filed by February 1st, 2021, unless otherwise specified in the award. And we will get into more detail with this later on so that you can see examples of awards that have different specifications. You also have to comply with the policies on previous Fulbright Scholar Awards, in particular the two-year waiting period between the end of a previous award and the application for a new award. But please do note that this two-year waiting period between grants does not apply if the most recent award was a student program award, because they are considered to be different programs. For the postdoctoral specific awards, your dissertation must be filed within the past 3 to 5 years, depending on the award description. But as such, since the postdoctoral awards have a broad description or a broad range in this program, some assistant professors who fall within this 3 to 5 years post-graduation time frame and receive a junior leave, you are actually also eligible for postdoc awards. And then when there are awards that say including early career, then postdoctoral applicants and assistant professors are eligible to apply for some of those awards. So you can see that you fall into a number of different categories. And what my hope is today is to help demystify some of these award descriptions so that you can truly find an award that you're eligible for and that you would be competitive for. Let's start by looking at this chart. It's a PhD timeline chart. If you look at this chart, if you file your dissertation before October 13th, 2021, and you might wonder why it is such a specific date, it's because that is the deadline for the Fulbright U.S. Student Program. So if you file your PhD before the U.S. Student Program deadline, you are only eligible for the U.S. Scholar Program. If you plan on filing your PhD before February 1st, 2021, you actually are eligible for the Scholar Program and the Student Program. If you file your dissertation before April 1st, 2022, then you are actually eligible for some Scholar Awards, not all, and you are eligible for the student program. And if you file your dissertation after April 1st, 2022, you are only eligible for the student program. I will explain why this works. If you look at this chart, the February 1st deadline, because we're currently working in the competition for the 2021-2022 academic year, the February 1st, 2021 date is the actual policy that is listed for all awards unless they're otherwise specified. Because the award cycle again is the 2021-2022 application cycle, if you file your dissertation before you start, some awards will allow you to extend out to that April 1st, 2022 deadline, and that's why you are eligible for sometime the Scholar Program and the Student Program at the same time. And you might wonder why you should apply to one versus the other. And as an overall rule of thumb, if you're in those middle two columns in that gray area where you might be competitive for one versus the other, I would first start by looking at where it is you want to go to see if you even are eligible for the Scholar Program, because again, some of the awards are not open to people who have that later graduation date, closing in on the April 1st, 2022 timeframe. If there is not an appropriate award through the Scholar Program, which is always the best place to start, I would then go and look and see if there is an appropriate award in the Student Program. And I can answer more questions about that as we go on, because sometimes that gray area is a little bit difficult to navigate. I do want you to know that there are Fulbright programs at every point in your career. It's just a matter of making sure that you find the program that will allow you to be the most competitive. Okay, so now let's look at how you can find postdoc-only awards. In the U.S. Scholar Program, all of the awards can be found at awards.cies.org. And the easiest way to find the postdoc only awards is to go into the search criteria and click on postdoctoral. Type the word postdoctoral into the search box. It returns 123 awards in which the word postdoctoral is found, but it doesn't mean that every single one of those awards are appropriate for postdoctoral candidates. It might say something like all people accept postdoctoral awards. But the advantage of putting postdoctoral in that search category as a keyword term is that all of the words that have postdoctoral in the title will appear up at the top. And I think that's useful if you really are trying to target a postdoc-only award. So if you look at the postdoc-only awards, currently we have 14 in the catalog. We have two for Australia, and these are in all disciplines. So whether you are in the humanities, social sciences, STEM fields, you are eligible for the awards in Australia as a postdoctoral candidate. One is with Deakin University and one is with the University of Newcastle, and Australia is in the process of adding a third postdoc award. So please keep your eyes open for the awards catalog because sometimes things get added later on in the competition. Canada also has a postdoctoral research award in all disciplines. So again, no matter what your discipline is, you're eligible to apply to that one. In Chile, it's a little bit more specific for the postdoctoral early career award. It's specifically in astronomy and Antarctic studies. China has a postdoctoral award for China studies in humanities, social sciences, and the arts. So if you do have a China focus to your research, this is a great opportunity. Czech Republic has a very open all-disciplines postdoctoral research award. France also has a postdoctoral research award in the social sciences. It is junior research, so it's specifically postdoctoral and early career only. Israel has four postdoctoral opportunities. One is a general postdoctoral award that's open to any location, and then we have three sponsored awards. Ben-Gurion University, University of Haifa, and the Weizmann Institute for Science. The nice thing to know about the awards to Israel is that they are open to the possibility of two full academic years. Most of our other postdoc awards are for one academic year. So Israel is the exception that allows for a two-year postdoc. In Mexico, there's the Fulbright Garcia Robles Postdoctoral Scholar Award. Taiwan has a postdoc award in arts, education, humanities, professional fields, and social sciences. And then there's also a multi-country award, which is the Fulbright Schumann Postdoctoral Award at the European University Institute. So that is specifically for people who are doing work in EU studies. So as you can see, we have a very vibrant postdoc program. Even though there are 14 awards listed here, many of these awards give out multiple awards, so there are more than 14 people receiving postdocs. And so I do want you to be open to considering Fulbright as an opportunity for a postdoc. Now, when you are navigating these awards, especially the postdoc awards, it's really, really important to click on that second tab that says Award Requirements. This is where you are going to get all of the fine details about what the award entails. So if you look at the examples that I have on the screen, there's a section called Applicant Profile, and they have additional qualification information. You want to read this very clearly because this will say something, for example, the PhD must be completed within the last 5 years. That would allow for those early career assistant professors or adjunct professors to apply. And then it says applicants must attain their doctorate by the proposed start date of their grant. Because we're looking at the 2021-2022 academic year, again, if you're proposing to go in January 2022, then you just need to apply or file your dissertation by January 2022. So it gives you almost 9 months after the program-wide deadline for filing your dissertation to be eligible. So this gives you a lot more flexibility in your filing date. Another example that you might see is candidates must receive their PhD degree no earlier than August 2016. Additionally, applicants must receive their PhD before they begin before they leave to Israel to begin their postdoctoral work. So it gives you like the latest you could file and the soonest you could file your dissertation to be eligible for that award. So again, pay very close attention to the awards requirements tab on the award description. Here is another way to find postdocs. In the advanced search criteria, there is an area that says candidate profile. You can simply check the postdoctoral box. This is any award, lists any award that includes postdoctoral as one of the acceptable candidate profiles. And as you can see, there are 71 awards that allow postdoctoral applicants to begin. But just like the previous example, you want to look carefully at that awards requirements tab. So here are a few examples that just highlight the type of information you can expect to find. So if you are in one of those awards that just lists postdoc in the candidate profile, you might see something like postdoctoral applicants may apply for research projects only. So if you're hoping to do research and teaching, it is not an option for this particular award. Or it might say postdoctoral candidates can apply in the last year of their PhD or within 5 years of its completion. And again, when we say 5 years of its completion, we are looking for within 5 years of the September 15th, 2021 application deadline. So please do keep that in mind as you're calculating your time. Again, if you are an early career applicant and you are an assistant professor and you have some type of a junior leave, these postdoctoral awards can actually be a great opportunity for you as well, because you are then only competing with people who are in the earlier part of the career, just like yourself. You won't be competing against more senior level scholars for some of these awards. Now, to find early career awards, the easiest way to do it is, again, go back to that candidate profile section and check the box academics, all levels, including early career. So if you are an early career applicant, also if you are an early career applicant who is possibly doing adjunct work, or if you are a contingent faculty member as you are pursuing a full-time opportunity, you are still eligible for many of these awards. And as you can see in this early career category, you have 283 awards in the catalog that you may be eligible to apply. But just like the last two examples that I gave, you need to look at that awards requirement tab. And I think if you learn nothing else from today's webinar, it would be just the importance of really carefully reviewing the awards requirement tab for the applicant profile. So if you look at this particular example up at the top, it says at least 3 years of teaching experience is required for projects with a teaching component. This is really important to keep in mind for some of these teaching research combination awards, especially if you're applying as an early career applicant. Unfortunately, work as a teaching assistant does not count towards this 3 years of teaching experience that's required. So you could have been a teaching assistant for 5 years during grad school, and nothing counts until it is after your PhD is filed. And so this is where it gets a little bit more complicated. However, if you did file your dissertation and you have been doing adjunct work, or if you are a contingent faculty member, or if you're an assistant professor anywhere, and have the 3 years of teaching experience, then you now are eligible to apply for this award. Another example that you might see is that scholars with a PhD and a minimum rank of assistant professor are preferred. Okay, if you are a lecturer and not an assistant professor, you still are eligible to apply for this award. They might state that they have a preference for an assistant professor, but if you are a strong applicant, they will consider your application and you have the opportunity to compete for a Fulbright Award. So again, please look very carefully at the award requirements, because they do change award by award. Here are some basic tips for PhD candidates that I'd like to provide. First, if you are a PhD candidate, using that chart that I presented earlier, and just so that you know, this presentation will be archived on our website shortly. You can go back and refer to that. But first, you want to determine the best program based on your expected filing date. That's the first recommendation that I have. Next, you want to contact us immediately if you have a question about eligibility. We are more than happy to answer questions you have about eligibility. The thing that helps us do that the most is if you send us your CV or resume and the specific award to which you are hoping to apply. With that information, we can help you determine eligibility. Next, please contact us immediately if there is some discrepancy in an award description. We try very carefully to make sure that there are no discrepancies, but every once in a while, something is a bit unclear. For example, in this example here on the slide, it says the candidate profile is academics, all level, including early career, and then postdoctoral candidates. But over in the applicant profile section, it says professor or associate professor with teaching and or related professional experience is required. Well, there is a mismatch there because the associate and full professors are not in their early career or postdoc candidates. So we would have to go clarify whether early career is indeed eligible, and we would update the description accordingly. So please let us know if you have any confusion about the award description because we try to make them as clear as possible. Next, if the student program is more appropriate based on your position right now, I would encourage you to work with the Campus Fulbright Program Advisor. Fulbright trains and has people on different campuses support Fulbright applicants. If the Scholar program is more appropriate, then reach out to the Scholar Outreach and Recruitment Team during our office hours. So I put the web address right there. Also, on every single award description, on the bottom right corner, you'll see a little button that says Join an Office Hour, and the schedule will be updated over there. So you do want to make sure that, make sure that you know how to get in touch with us. You join an office hour by the region that you're interested in visiting, and we can help you and answer your questions then. But I do want you to know that you actually are not able to apply to both the student and the scholar program. You have to choose one of those programs, and you are only able to apply to one program, even if you are technically eligible for both. So that's why this decision-making process in the beginning is so important. Okay, what does the application consist of? First, there's an application form, and if you are considering moving forward with an application, I would encourage you to get that started. It takes a while just to put in your name, your address, all of that information. So get the application started because that also allows us to send reminders or invitations to advising sessions that we have to make sure that you can submit the strongest application possible. Next, you'll have to create a project statement, which is 3 to 5 pages. It outlines what it is that you propose to do, why it's important, what methodology you're using, how it'll impact the country that you're visiting, some general ideas like that. The information and some guiding questions about the project statement can be found on our website, but I do want you to keep in mind that Fulbright, at the heart of Fulbright, is that cultural exchange between people of other nations, so do make sure that that idea and that purpose comes through in your project statement as well. You'll need a CV or resume, 2 letters of recommendation, and sometimes you need a language proficiency report. You can find out in the awards requirements tab if you require that, and then an invitation letter if it is also required. There are also supplemental materials. If you are applying for a postdoc award that's a research-only award, you will need to include a bibliography. The bibliography is not a listing of your publications as much as a listing of the publications in your discipline that you are positioning your work within. So you do want to make sure that that bibliography represents some of the latest findings and information about the project that you're proposing to do. If you are applying for a teaching research combination award or a teaching only award, then you will need course outlines and syllabi. And then if you're applying in any of the creative fields, art, architecture, creative writing, journalism, you also have the opportunity to submit a portfolio. The biggest date to keep in mind for the 2021-22 cycle is that the application deadline is September 15th. So you do have to apply almost one full year before you could possibly start your award. And in some cases, you might not start your award for almost 1.5 years after the deadline if you do apply and receive an award. But do keep in mind that the September 15th, 2020 is the deadline for your application, your letter of invitation, and all of your letters of recommendation. So all of the materials need to be submitted by that point. Then we will conduct a peer review in the United States. Once peer review is complete, you'll find out whether your application has been forwarded on to the country of choice or not. And then if it's forwarded on, we have rolling decisions between January and April where you are notified of the final awards. After that, you'll just be working with your documents and try to upload them and get ready for departing for your grant. So again, September 15th, 2020 is the key date to keep in mind for this particular application cycle. Okay, we've made it through all of the content and we have about 30 minutes left. I see quite a few participants on the line, and so I will take the time now to answer some of your questions that you asked in the chat box, and thank you again for posing questions here in the chat box. Okay, give me a second. Okay, hold on. Some of the questions are a little bit lengthy, and I want to make sure that I have all the context. For a research project in the application, in the research project, does it need to be a project that is funded in advance? Does the home institution have to sponsor the postdoc to secure the funding? Okay, this type of a question, when you're talking about funding, I would refer you back to the award description. If you are doing some type of a project that requires laboratory equipment and you are required to have a letter of invitation, then I would check with the sponsoring association. So it's not the home institution we're looking at as much as the institution that you'll be working at abroad. Do they have equipment? Will they allow you to use this equipment? If so, you would want that outlined in the letter of invitation, if at all possible. Some awards provide a research budget. So does the award that you're looking at include a research budget? If so, then can you use part of that research budget to acquire the equipment that you have? Just earlier today, I had a webinar with a scientist from Fulbright Finland, and he said that it took him a while to get the materials that he needed because the procedures in the country he was going to were slightly different than that and those procedures in the United States. So it would just be important for you to do your due diligence ahead of time as you're writing a project statement so that you can make sure you address your timeline and the use of the equipment in your application. There's someone who's asking about a template for a letter of invitation from a host institution. And I do want to tell you, if you go to our website, which is CIES.org, and I'll actually, CIES.org, you can type in invitation and it'll give you some pointers about how the invitation should be structured. A couple key points about the invitation is that it should be on letterhead from the institution who is issuing it, and it also should detail some of the agreements that you have come up with. So will you be teaching or researching? Will they grant you lab space? Will you be collaborating with a particular scholar at that institution? So the more detail that they can provide highlighting the agreements that you guys have reached, the better that invitation will be. But please note that letters of invitation are non-binding, and so at any point you can choose to withdraw. The institution can also choose to withdraw. All right, so someone's asking about postdoc awards that require teaching experience. Actually, if it is a postdoc-only award, those are research-only awards. So if you are a full-time researcher, then you could apply to the postdoc as long as you fall within the guidelines of people who have graduated within the last 3 to 5 years, again, depending on the award description. You would only need teaching experience if you are applying for some type of a teaching research award. And if that is the case, then I would encourage you to, again, send your CV to us with a link to the award description that you're considering, and we can help you determine eligibility. I'll probably say that again and again because I do think that that's the best time to get your questions answered. There's another question about stipends. Are stipends paid outright to the scholars, or are they reimbursed after they output the money themselves? The stipends are given directly to the scholar. They do not go through the home institution. They are given directly to the scholar. You, of course, might need funds in the beginning until you receive your stipend in country, but generally those are dispersed at the beginning of your period of time abroad so that you can get set up abroad. Okay, I have a question from an independent researcher without a university affiliation. Are independent researchers eligible? Absolutely, but not for every award. So again, you would need to refer to the award description. Some awards specifically state that a university affiliation is required. So for example, in Japan, for a research award, it states that for artists, they must be affiliated with a university. That is a dead requirement. However, we have had many independent scholars receive Fulbright awards. If you would like to see more scholars or which scholars have received Fulbright awards, feel free to go over to the scholar directory. And I will take the time to show you right here the website and how you can find the scholar directory. If you go to our website, which is CIES.org, and scroll down, you can view the Fulbright Scholar Directory. The Scholar Directory is a wonderful opportunity to find out which scholars received awards in which countries and during which academic years. So for home institution, I can put independent scholar and search for that. And you can see independent scholars, unaffiliated scholars, what discipline they were in, where they went, and that will allow you to get an idea of what type of projects and what type of opportunities people from independent scholars have had in the past. Okay, there's a question about where non-tenure track full-time professors fit in. Non-tenure track full-time professors can actually fit into many of the awards. So, for example, if you are a contingent faculty member, so you might be a lecturer or you might be an adjunct faculty member but still full-time, then you can apply for any award that does not say you need a specific rank. So some awards will say must be associate professor, must be full professor, must be assistant professor, whatever the ranking is. One example I'm thinking of is the Yonsei University Distinguished Lectureship Award to Korea. I had an academic who did adjunct work and was also a full-time researcher at R1 institution who asked to apply, but in fact he was not eligible because they said that you must have that ranking of full professor. But if you are considering an award, please know that many lecturers who are contingent faculty and not necessarily tenure track faculty have received awards in the past. And so please feel free to reach out if you need a little bit more assistance with positioning for an award. Okay, you guys have so many good questions in here. Are there restrictions for applicants who are members of the U.S. Army Reserve? No, there are not restrictions because of being in the Army Reserve. In fact, if you are a veteran, where all things are considered equal, preference is given to veterans. And so please consider applying or reaching out again if you have questions about eligibility. There is a question about dual citizenship. If I am a dual citizen, am I eligible? This will again depend on the award description. So if you take it the example of awards to Korea, they have a very, in the awards requirement tab, that second tab, they have a very detailed list of information about people who are dual citizens and their eligibility. If it is not explicitly listed that dual citizens are ineligible, then you should assume that you are eligible. In the application, you will list your dual citizenship, and that's not, it's neither good nor bad. It is just a piece of information that we need as we try to work through the application and process paperwork if you are to receive an award. Okay, someone said that they lost audio. I hope that the audio is still going, but please let me know if the audio is still unclear. Okay, now there's a question. Is an MFA equivalent to a PhD for Fulbright? Yes, it is equivalent. But MFAs fall into this gray area. Even though it is considered a terminal degree, it is also not a doctorate. So MFA applicants can actually be eligible and competitive in the student and the scholar program. In our archive, you can see a webinar that I did for people in the fine arts. So if you're an MFA applicant, you might want to go listen to that. But in the end, I would recommend that you reach out to either your Fulbright program advisor on your campus or go to one of the office hours to help figure out which program is the best for you. If you are a recent MFA, like maybe within 5 years of graduating, in a lot of sense, the student program is actually where you might be more competitive. If you are further out of your MFA, then you might be more competitive in the scholar program because you would be competing in those, the category, all levels of scholar, including early career. So it could be people throughout their career that you would be competing with. Okay, let's keep going on. Is the peer review committee discipline specific? That is a great question. So yes, in the United States, the peer review committee is discipline specific. I know these days many people do interdisciplinary work, and if that's the case, then I would encourage you to select the discipline that best represents your primary discipline, because that will generally be the peer review committee that will be reviewing your work. However, once your application, if it makes it through peer review and it gets forwarded on to the host country, it will be reviewed by a broader audience. And so I do want to encourage you to keep that in mind as you're writing your project statement. You want to make sure that the peer review committee can assess your qualifications based on your project statement, but also that an educated audience who might not be from your discipline can understand the importance of your work. So it takes a lot of careful writing as you're drafting your project statement. Will all the postings be up by February, or will new postings still be added between February and September? There are new postings that get added after February. There are not that many. I think we've had maybe 5 or 6 postings added since then. Basically, all of the postings around have been added by now, except one more postdoc to Australia that I'm in conversations with that will be added hopefully this week or next. But generally, they are all there. Does it matter if the teaching experience was prior to graduate school? That one is a really tricky question because I have had some countries say that, let's say you got a master's degree and you were teaching at a community college for 3 years, and then you went back and got your PhD and you're applying right after your PhD. There are some countries who will accept that community college experience as experience needed for teaching awards, and then there are other countries who will not accept that because they want only stuff that comes after your PhD. So if you are in the situation where your teaching experience was prior to graduate school, again, send your CV, send the award that you're considering, and we can try to help you determine eligibility. Okay. Are portfolios only for artists and professionals? Can other applicants send a portfolio or other relevant information? The portfolio option is only for artists and only certain kinds of professionals, like architects, maybe creative writers or journalists. The way that this works is that when you select your discipline in the online application system, the portfolio either will or will not generate based on the discipline that you select. And so if you are a linguist and you select linguistics, the portfolio will not appear as an option. If you choose creative writing, then you will be allowed to upload the portfolio. So the application adjusts like that to meet the needs and the disciplines of the scholars. Okay, there's someone, let me see. I'm interested in a 3-month research or teaching position during the U.S. summer. Should I be looking at countries in the Southern Hemisphere that would be in the middle of the semester? That's a good question, because one of the goals of Fulbright is to allow the U.S. scholars to be able to interact with the scholars abroad. If you go during the U.S. summer, many countries also are on their summer break, and so it's not not an ideal time to go. If you can find a country that is off cycle from what our cycle is, you are eligible to apply for that. But as far as it being limited to 3 months, that would depend on the award description. Every country has a different length of time that is allowed to be in that country, and so you would just need to follow those guidelines. If it says the award must be 5 to 6 months, then you can only propose a project that is 5 to 6 months. You cannot propose a project that is shorter or longer than that. So really pay attention, very careful attention to the details in the award description. Okay, if we're trying to move into a discipline different from our degree, what should we include in our bibliography? This is a really interesting question, too, because when you are trying to shift disciplines, you want to somehow show that you are qualified to do so. And if you studied to be a political scientist and now you are doing work in neuroscience, then you absolutely are able to select your discipline as being neuroscience. But what you would need to do is somehow try to make sure that that neuroscience committee can see that you as a former political scientist are eligible to do the work in neuroscience. So as far as the bibliography, you would want to make sure that it represents the most recent research on that topic in the field, that you have some perhaps publication or teaching expertise in that different discipline that you are applying within. Because if you go to our website and look at the review criteria, and I will go over here and navigate to the website, over here. If you're on the website right here and you go to program and click on U.S. Scholars, the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, then you can click right here on the review criteria. And so one thing that I usually talk to people about who do move to different disciplines is make sure that you can address how your training background and experience make you eligible to do the project that you're proposing. So you really do need to work hard to get to that eligibility. Can I submit multiple letters of invitation? You are generally submitting a letter of invitation to work at one host institution. If you have some type of a need to be at two different host institutions, you should reach out to program staff to confirm that that is actually allowed. If you are applying for a multi-country award, so for example, the Africa Regional Research Program Award, you would submit multiple letters of invitation for each award. Okay. I will be a postdoc in public policy with extensive career experience and teaching experience. If you are trying to determine eligibility, please do send your resume on to us and we can help you determine eligibility. Okay, the scholar deadline. Okay, if there are eligibility specific questions that are not general, I actually am going to ask that you send off an email or attend an office hour so that we can deal with those a little bit more specifically. Is the U.S. the official employer or the host country the employer? Nobody is actually the employer. You are receiving a fellowship, and the fellowship is for you to go do your independent work. Some Fulbright scholars retain their home affiliation if they're on a sabbatical from their home university, so they're officially employed by their university. But Fulbright is not an employer. We provide fellowships for people to go and conduct independent research or teaching abroad. Okay, now there's a question from a naturalized citizen. Does choosing a country where one is originally from hurt or help one's chances? I would say it neither hurts nor helps. You will be judged by your academic efforts. If you are a naturalized citizen, then please know you are just as eligible as anyone else to apply. The only time this would not be the case is if there's a statement in the award description that says preference is given to people who have not spent significant amount of time in this country. And so if that is listed in the award description, then that might be something you would keep in mind. But you can see if you look through the Fulbright Scholar Directory that many of the awards actually have, many heritage applicants have received Fulbrights to return to their country of origin, and the advantage is that they have the language skills to allow them to be successful. Okay, let me go through and come down. If you're trying to decide between student and scholar, again, please do reach out to us. We can help you with that connection. There's a question about how to receive a letter of invitation if you don't have any connections to that host institution. There are a couple different ways you can go about doing that. So if I look at this award, for example, here to Vietnam, I can be at any appropriate institution. Sometimes if you click at the award requirements tab, it will list a contact point. So right here, the only contact point is the U.S. Embassy in Hanoi and the East Asia and Pacific team. If there is not a direct contact for this particular award, then what I would do is I would go over to the Fulbright Scholar Directory. So going down over here, I would go to the Fulbright Scholar Directory, and I would search by program country, Vietnam. And what comes back is a listing of all of the people who have received Fulbright awards to Vietnam. You can sort it by discipline. And then there's a distinction between U.S. scholars, and then over here you can see non-U.S. visiting scholars. If you are an applicant who is in the field of education and you're interested in curriculum planning work, then it might be nice to reach out to this Vietnamese scholar who benefited from participation in the Fulbright program. Usually people who have participated are enthusiastic about supporting other people who are interested in the Fulbright program. So now we look over here and I know where this person is located. And I know what this person's name is. if I go to this university website and I cannot find this scholar and I think that I have a dead end, what I would encourage you to do is look over here and see if you can find the faculty associate who worked with this scholar at the University of Texas at Austin. This person might have a contact information for this scholar, and then you can introduce yourself. I would also encourage you to say a little bit about the project that you would like to propose, again, one that would fit within the award description of either research or teaching and research, and start a conversation to see if you can possibly receive a letter of invitation from that scholar. So that is the best way to move forward. You can also reach out to the international office on your campus. They might have some information about scholars that they could recommend that you reach out to. Okay, the next question that I have is, if you're applying for a teaching award, am I submitting syllabi of proposed courses I would like to teach? Actually, you do not need to submit syllabi for proposed courses that you would like to teach. You can submit syllabi from courses that you already teach, ones that have been tested, perhaps ones that have really creative assignments that you think would fit well in an international environment. The purpose of the syllabi is to give the peer review committee an idea of how you would function as an instructor. So what would your classes be like if you were in Vietnam or if you were in Sweden? And how would they be adapted to that setting that you're going into? And so for applicants who are applying for some type of a teaching or teaching research combination award, I encourage them to submit syllabi that might be examples of the types of courses they could teach abroad, but ones that are syllabi that you're most proud of, that really illustrate some of your creativity as a teacher, and of course your structure and planning of a course. Does Fulbright help with the relocation to the country and finding residence? That is a great question. And so what I would encourage you to do on the award description is to click on this third tab that says stipend and benefits. So if I use this example of Vietnam, you can see right here that the stipend amount is calculated by your rank. So if you are applying for a teaching or teaching research position, we had some questions from contingent faculty who were not tenure line faculty. So you would probably fall into this category, assistant professor or below. You would receive this stipend. Additionally, you would receive a travel and relocation allowance of $3,500 to $8,000. You would receive a book and educational material allowance per semester, with the understanding that these would be donated to the host institution upon your departure. In this particular award, they also provide dependent tuition assistance of $5,000 per child per semester for up to two children if they are in first through 12th grade. And it also has a special benefit of a language allowance if you submit your receipts for that particular one. So as far as having them help find housing, this is more a question that I would recommend going back to the Fulbright Scholar Directory, possibly doing the advanced search filters and looking by academic year, possibly someone who went in the last year or two. And then I would encourage you to reach out to some of these people here and ask them how they found their information. The Fulbright grantees who are getting ready to leave, they inform us that they receive a lot of useful information from the alumni. And so I would encourage you to ask people from the country to which you're thinking of applying to asking those specific questions that are those on-the-ground questions. Does the stipend come from the United States? It is sponsored by the United States, but we have partnerships with countries around the world. So there are many countries. For example, if you look at the program in India, which offers over 40 awards, they are also strong contributors to the program. So it really is a binational program. If you are a U.S. citizen but have lived in another country, are you still eligible for the awards? We do actually have one eligibility requirement. Again, if you're trying to figure out what those requirements are, you would just go over to program, to the U.S. Scholar Program, and click on that eligibility tab. And in fact, one eligibility requirement is that candidates who have resided abroad for 5 or more consecutive years in the 6-year period preceding the date of application are ineligible. And we do consider 9 months, like an academic year, to be considered a full year. So if you have been living abroad for more than 5 of the past 6 years, then you are not eligible for a Fulbright Award until you reside in the United States long enough to meet that eligibility requirement. Okay, there's another question about master's degrees. Are master's degrees terminal degrees? It depends on the discipline, so you would need to reach out if you have a question about that. So, for example, a master's in TESOL is not it's one of those, it's not a terminal degree because you can also go on and study that with a PhD in applied linguistics, whereas an MFA, a Master's of Fine Arts, is considered a terminal degree because that is the last that you can do for that particular degree program. If you have any questions, again, reach out to confirm eligibility. Okay. A lot of these are about whether you should apply for the student or scholar program. I know that's really one of the most complicated decisions that you need to make, which is why I am hosting this webinar. I really want to try to demystify that, but I do think that for the specific examples, it's best to send your CV along with the award you're interested in applying to, and we can help you determine eligibility. If you're applying for a teaching research award, how do you determine the percentages? That is generally a conversation that you would have with your host unless it's specifically stated in the award description that you must spend 50% of your time doing each activity, and then you would be able to propose that specific percentage. But otherwise, it is a negotiation between the host institution and you. I know we're at the end of our time, but I did want to just return one more time at the request of some of the questions to this slide. This is that eligibility slide. Again, this will help you determine which program is going to be the best fit for you, but because there is the gray area in the middle, please reach out to help determine the best fit for you. Whether you go through the student program or whether you go through the scholar program, we hope to be able to support you on conducting your research abroad and find ways for this to be possible for you. Thank you so much for joining today. If I was unable to answer your question, feel free to email scholars@iie.org with your questions, and we will respond as soon as we can. Thank you again. Best of luck if you decide to move forward with an application. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Goodbye.